Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Very, very bad here. People are defecating in my building, you know, where I am on in the hallways, because they can't get upstairs to go to the bathrooms. Where are they going to go? They're looking all around for a place to go. There's nowhere for them to go in this area.
I'll tell you what. There's never been a day in the last 4 years I've been proud to be his vice president. Not one single day. Not one single day.
You know, talk radio is wonderful. Wait a minute now. Joe, please. There's never been a day in the last 4 years that you've been proud to be his vice president. I would call this a Freudian slip, but I think it's beyond the Freudian slip. We can rewrite the dictionary. No one knows who Freud is anymore. He's been debased, thrown out. But everybody knows who Biden is. Instead of calling it a Freudian slip, we can start calling it a Biden slip, because they're becoming so prominent, they're more prominent than or prevalent than a Freudian slip. Welcome to the Savage Nation. If you just joined us, that's good, because the show just started. It couldn't have been earlier that you joined us. It's impossible. As you could tell, I'm in a mirthful mood, and there's a number of reasons for it. Some ridiculous, some sublime, and some have nothing to do with anything except the orange juice that I just drank before the show. And, of course, it's wonderful that the election will be over, thank God. I would say Tuesday, but you know it's not Tuesday. The media will keep it going, and the lawyers will keep it going maybe another year. This could go on and be like Bolivia. This could go on and maybe through 2013. Let's hope not. The phone number here, it's open mic to Mike Friday, is 855-400-7282, 1-855-400-SAVAGE. And what I'm going to do is what I usually have done for years, which is open mic to Mike Friday. Any topic is fair game. From anywhere in America, it's toll free. It could be election. It could be Romney versus Obama. It could be people defecating in the hallways in New York City while Bloomberg fiddles. I've given Mike Bloomberg a new name, which is Jeroboam Mike. And the reason I've affectionately tagged this moniker to the mayor of New York is because when he started in with the sodas, let them, you know, drink small sodas, I said, you know, this guy doesn't even understand what average people go through. The reason they buy 32-ounce sodas is to save money. It's not necessarily to drink the whole thing. A 32-ounce soda, Mayor, is, you know, cheaper than two 16s, which is why you serve Jeroboams of wine as opposed to fifths of wine, because it's cheaper. So I'm going to call him from now on Jeroboam Mike. It's just insane, this guy. He went on and on with the, thank God he canceled it at the last minute, the marathon. I personally don't like marathoners. I don't know anyone who likes a marathoner other than people who run marathons. They're skinny, they're nasty. They think only of them. They're narcissists. Anyone who's in a marathon is a narcissist. That's all. It's as simple as that. I exercise, but I don't turn it into my life. I don't run and look at my behind in the mirror after I run to see my glutes. You know, who cares about marathons? It's like a subway with water bottles. Why they couldn't put the water in Staten Island is amazing. They need. And where's Obama on all of this? He came, he saw, and he flew away. He waved his magic wand, and suddenly the waters disappeared from New York. You would think that after Obama came to New York, that the waters receded. There were water bottles dispersed to Staten Island. Electricity was restored to the gasoline pumps. But no, he flew away with the, now, by the way, Christie's finished. You talk about a man who's destroyed his career with one move. It was coming to New York with Obama, number one. And number two, acting like he actually did something, number two. Over. Boardwalk Empire. Bad actor in a bad segment of that series. Over, finished. So what I'm going to do for you is take your calls, because I am an expert on call taking on the Savage Nation. I'm getting bizarre calls now, which I can't believe. Nothing to do with politics, which is good. It's good. You wouldn't be listening to this show if it was just political right now, would you? You want to hear one more word about Obama versus Romney? I don't think so. So what I'm going to do is go to my website, michaelsavage.com, the little site that could. I mean, there are better sites. You know, I wake up, I read the Drudge Report for my news in the morning. Then I go to Newsmax, WorldNet Daily. I go to Fox News and about 10 others. My site, I use pictures. Top right, Mayor Dumberg finally cancels marathon. Bottom top right, stranded New Yorker, people are defecating in the hallways. Not funny. Now, here's an interesting one that you're not going to see anywhere else. Pelosi holds secret fundraiser with Hamas-linked groups. You talk about a piece of work. There's a picture of her with groups linked to Hamas, your good friend Nancy. Here's another one on my website. Muslim clerics say Sandy is Allah's way of punishing America for anti-Muhammad film. Well, I would ask those Muslim clerics, is it Allah's way of punishing you in Pakistan every time there's a cyclone? Is it Allah's way every time a cyclone hits Pakistan or Indonesia and unfortunate Muslims are killed? Is that Allah's way, you dumb moron, you? You dumb idiots, you? What a world I live in. Here's another one that probably won't make it to your local newspaper. Service members upset over removal from voting rolls. They took them off the voting rolls in Florida. Oh, yeah. Too Republican. But illegal aliens, come right here. Step right up this way to the carnival. Criminal intelligence says Benghazi gave 1 month warning. Tell that to Hillary Clinton. Man pulls gun in gas line as tensions. Hey, you get the picture. I don't want to read anymore. I'm already out of breath from it. Let's go to the bottom of my website, see what's there. Was Killer Nanny a crackhead? That's my own headline, and I'll tell you why. From the minute I saw her face in the purple fingernails and killing the two children and the gaunt and the skinny, I said, in my opinion, if I were the prosecutor or the investigator, I would look into the into use of crack. You heard what happened with her, right? They bent over backwards for this creature, and she repaid them in blood, killed the two little babies. She wanted more money, so they said, do some housework. She said, I wasn't hired to do housework. The next thing, she cuts their throats. Unbelievable. College OK's transgender male in girls' locker room. You got to see this story. This one, you got to see what's happened in this society. Now, before I take your calls, wow, look at this. Look at these great calls I have. Oh, we got a woman. One, you see, I told you, out of my many millions of listeners on the Savage Nation, I have approximately 20 to 30 women listeners. It's mainly right-wing cracker Republicans, people without front teeth who have refrigerators on their front lawn. You see, that's the stereotype. All right-wingers have refrigerators on their front lawn. They're deliverance types, and no women listen. If you had any idea what you were talking about, you wouldn't be voting for Obama. Let's take a call. Judy in San Francisco on you're in Nevada on KSFO. KSFO, Judy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I love you. I was listening to you many years ago, and you turned me from a Democrat who used to believe the mainstream media and read the Chronicle, and now I am so conservative that some of my friends don't even talk to me. So.
Oh, are you lucky? Judy, you lost people who were not really your friends. You lost acquaintances who you didn't really need in your life. They were poisoning you.
Right, and my little Maltese and I listen to you all the time, and we're so happy to have you back. And
isn't that wonderful? No, it's a wonderful thing for me to be back on KSFO. I used to love being on the other station, but now that I can be heard everywhere without the crystal sets that people had to use to receive me, it's a wonderful feeling. I went into a local restaurant the other day, and people basically came over to me like I was the Pope, saying, we love hearing you, thank you. And I never go out like that. I mean, I'm anonymous. I stay. It's just me and Teddy having a pizza and a beer. That's about it. Judy, thank you very much. I'm so glad that I converted you to reality. I have a treat for you on the Savage Nation tonight that you're not going to believe. And I'm so glad that I'm back on 140-some-odd stations. And the development of the show is going to grow to about 500 stations within time. I'm sure of it. Cumulus is a fabulous company. They love me. I hope they do. They wouldn't assign me if they didn't. And, I think the important thing for you to know is that as the show develops, you're going to get to know me better than you've ever known me. Some of you know me because you've listened to me since I was a local host on KSFO in 1994-95. And you know my range. My range is unlike any other in talk radio. I have to say that. When I come back after this first break, which I'll take in a few minutes, I'm going to read you a private email that was sent to me from a new colleague at Cumulus Media. You're not going to believe what you hear. You're not going to believe it. This person thought that I was going to be sort of a low IQ shock jock. She heard stories about me that were not true, that was spread by some vicious vaudeville operators in another state who were trying to hold on to me, the vaudeville operators, and they spread the stories about me that are not true. But the fact of the matter is, when you hear what I'm going to read to you, you're going to find out maybe a little bit more about who Michael Savage really is. But if you'd like to talk to all the folks listening to this program this Friday evening before the election. Thank God Halloween is over. What's the next holiday we have to look forward to? We poor little people. We people in we got Thanksgiving. That should be fun. You look forward to it all year. You buy the new dishes, the bells, the dishes, and then that doesn't work out. No matter what you do, nothing works. You know why? Because life is very difficult. What you have to understand as you get to listen to me is that I'm fundamentally a pessimist. Now, I know that is considered almost a crime in America, because after the book How to Win Friends and Influence People was written, if you acknowledged in any way that you were not happy 24/7, or that if you said life is really difficult and people are monstrous, and really what's the point of it all, but I get through it somehow anyway because I believe in God and I know that the worst crime you can commit is suicide. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm trying to be positive in a certain negative way. You will come to understand that in order to live, you have to have pathos amongst all. Everything requires pathos because most of our lives are rather boring and difficult. And once you accept that life is not happy, life is not a party, as they say, life is not a bowl of cherries, once you accept that, life is actually easier. It's when you constantly seek that bowl of cherries that you wind up never eating dessert. I'm sorry to sound, you know, a little like a card here, but I have callers now asking me, because it's open mic to Mike, they're asking me personal questions about their lives. You're taking a big risk asking me. I may not be the right person to answer those questions, but since I'm older, I've been around, I have children, you know, what does that make me? Makes me knowledgeable about my own family and my own life. As good as I can do it, I will answer your questions. But the truth is, how can any man really give you advice in life? You see, that's the horrible reality. It's why the entire psychiatric profession is a sham. Ultimately, no one can tell you anything about how to live your life. If you actually accept that, you realize it's frightening, isn't it? Can anyone really advise you how to live? Now, let me ask you another question. Who are you relying upon to answer you? A therapist, right? You think that therapist's life is better than your life? You think that therapist knows more about life than you do? You think that that therapist is not half crazy half the time, all the time, all of the people all of the time? See, the point is that why are you relying upon other people to tell you how to lead your life? They can't tell you anything. You have to set your own compass. You first of all, you have to find out where north is to know where south is. Then you'll know where east is and where west is. And there are certain ways to do that. And it's not through people necessarily, because people are imperfect. There's only one perfect thing on the earth. You know what that is? It's the sense of God, if it's not God itself, God himself. Many of you don't even understand that, but God is the lodestone. God is the North Star. And I'm not going to do any more religion talk on the Savage Nation right now, but truthfully, without that center, what you become is Joe Biden. I'll be right back.
It is the Savage Nation. It's Rock and Roll Friday. Many people couldn't wait to hear it again. Mondays, I usually run Blue Monday by Fats Domino, and Friday by the time Friday comes. It marks the week. It's like I watch certain TV shows on certain nights. Sorry, Boss is over. I don't know what happened. Boardwalk Empire was a stiff last week. They better just amp it up a little bit. It's getting good, then it's bad, then it gets good, then horrible. I mean, after the floods in New Jersey, you know the opening scene to Boardwalk Empire, if you get HBO, is of Buscemi's shoes in the beach in the water. It was a prescient. You got to hand it to Martin Scorsese. He foresaw Florsheim shoes being flooded 100 years later. Questions for the Savage Nation. How will Governor Christie's actions affect his standings with Republicans nationally? Well, it's very simple. He's finished. Question two. The media was quick to attack Bush over Katrina. Why are they so silent over Sandy? Answer, because they're dirty, no-good rats. Three, where are the reports on what is going on in Staten Island and Coney Island? Why has the media not covered this? Answer, because it would make Obama look bad. Four, has Obama's actions on Sandy or Benghazi changed your thoughts or your vote? Answer, no, because they're brainwashed cheese recipients. Let's go to the callers. Where's the good one? Dallas, Texas, KLIF. Helen, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I'm a longtime listener, about 15 years. My husband and I have been together for 16, so you've been with us through the whole marriage.
Oh, my God.
Okay, here's what I need to say to you. I think it was the Daily News in New York said that abuse of power, big bold letters on the cover of their newspaper today, and I caught that in a glimpse on Fox News. So they stole that line from you. And the other thing is trickle-down tyranny, trickle-up poverty. I've been buying these books. As soon as they come out, I buy 100 copies of each. I did that with trickle-down tyranny, and I gave them to all my liberal friends. I gave it to them free because I figured this is an education.
You really are you are a blessing of a listener. So what's on your mind tonight?
But I have come to the conclusion that sometimes they're just lost.
But tell me what's on your main, what's your main thought tonight?
I woke up really anxious this morning. It feels like I've been holding my breath for 2 years waiting for this election, and I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. And do you think it's going to happen? And I need to know, Savage, what the hell are we going to do, excuse my language, if he gets reelected or steals it because our buddy Soros is running the show?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that question. It's like the day after tomorrow. I mean, if Obama wins, it's the day after tomorrow. I mean, I don't have an answer for you. The man is going to... It'll be like Grant took Richmond. He's like the Grim Reaper, Obama. He's going to pick up that scythe and he's going to cut down the rest of our capitalist system.
Yeah.
It's as quick a summary as I can make it. He will take a scythe to the rest of the capitalist structures. You know that.
Yes, I do.
We all know that. He is the Grim Reaper. I thought you were the 35-year-old woman stuck in an 80-year-old man's body.
I'm 35 years old, stuck in an 80-year-old man's body. I've been listening for 15 years.
I thought that was going to be the main part of the call. It didn't make sense to me. I thought that the call screener got it wrong. I thought you were saying you're a 35-year-old woman and there's an 80-year-old man who was stuck to you or something.
Oh, nope. I'm one of your 20 women callers and I've been
You're a
35-year-old
woman stuck in a... You mean you feel like you're 80 most of the time?
Ago, you said, "Oh, I got about 20 female callers, and they're all about 80
you're all over the map." Well, I'll tell you, I can't take this call. I need time to develop it. Maybe when I come back, we'll deal with that one.
There's never been a day in the last 4 years I've been proud to be his vice president. Not one single day. Not one single day. But anyway,
well, that's what we call a Biden slip, not a Freudian slip. There's no need to call it a Freudian slip anymore. There's never been a day in the last 4 years I've been proud to be his vice president. I mean, what is this guy doing? What is this man doing? You know, if you look back at the last few weeks, Obama's not really made many mistakes. The first debate was bad, but he's pretty slick. He doesn't make the... Biden has undermined his entire campaign. Biden is a disaster. In fact, I don't know why they kept Biden. I have no idea. If I were advising the Democrats, I would have picked somebody else to be his running mate. It should have been Hillary Clinton. I mean, first of all, that would have helped Romney, because Hillary Clinton is now toast because of the Arab winter, because of the deaths in Libya. But from the point of view of a wiser political choice at that time, it would have been Hillary. Biden is a disaster. I mean, he's undermined them, truthfully. Now, I promised you something earlier on the Savage Nation. As you know, I'm with a new network, Cumulus Media Networks, and it's a great company. I'm very proud to be with them. And all the people I'm working with are all new people. They don't know me. I don't know them, right? Here's an email. It's a personal, private email. I will not identify the individual, and I'm going to read it to you. It's a new colleague at Cumulus Media, and it was written by this person. And the question is, why have you become a Savage fan? This person said they didn't like me at first. Well, they didn't think they would like me. And the answer was, it's not a simple answer. I'm actually quite surprised with my reaction. Everyone I know in the business has told me stories about Savage. My friends made bets that I wouldn't last a week without storming out on ideology alone. I'm even a moderate liberal from a solid Republican family. I had a built-in bias that I think all shock jocks are short on IQ with huge borderline personality disorders. So when I walked in, I decided to grit my teeth and put up with the low IQ of a show because I thought Michael Savage would be a solid shock jock. He did something very few people can do with me. He made me laugh. I listened how deftly he handled the stupidest callers and created a dialogue by using the tension of the mute button, then bringing them back on cue. He wove the callers in and out of his dialogue so it created the drama even if there was no drama or personality in the caller. Then suddenly, When I listen to Savage off mic, when he was yelling or whatever doing in the background or harping on everything, it suddenly became funny. I just snickered and shook my head at this harping curmudgeon of a man, and I understood him. I realize his irritation has to do with the with his having a high IQ and wishing the world lived up to his high standards. And when they don't live up to his standards, he can be difficult. He mirrors what I do, and I get it. So now I have a crush on him because he is so gifted. However, I'm not turning Republican. I have a reputation to uphold. That's from a new colleague of mine at Cumulus. And believe me, I know something about people that you work with. They do determine the course of your career. And you ask anybody in the film business if that's false, or you're frankly anyone in any business. It's about a team effort at the end of the day. And I'll give you an example. You know how many actresses could have had better careers if they weren't difficult? And they got ruined by a cameraman who took them from the wrong angle. They would shoot an angle where the double chin showed. I've seen it happen over and over again. Whenever I see a beautiful girl being displayed from a side shot where she's got a double chin, a little gump job, I know that she did something to the cameraman or the makeup man or the sound man, right? And so it's the same in radio. Don't assume for a minute it's not the same in radio. It's the same in every entertainment of every aspect of entertainment. I'm dependent upon people, and I know that. And many of them come into the business. Many of them are liberal in the business. It's true. Unfortunately, the entertainment business, even radio, people are 99% liberal behind the scenes. And I have to work with everybody, and they don't really know who I am. And I say to them after they get to know me better, read the New Yorker interview that was done in 2009, and you'll know Michael Savage better, because that was the best interview ever done on me, the best. Still the best, number one. And I'm happy with it because when I grew up, anyone who was profiled in a New Yorker when I was a kid, when I was coming up, I don't know who it was, jazz greats, literary figures, whenever they got a profile in a New Yorker with that very special cartoon of them, the caricature, to me that was the zenith of the world of the mind. And then when I got that, I thought it was the top. I don't think I've gone any higher than that. I mean, I've written six great books in a row now, but that interview captured all of the essence of me. It's funny. I'll do it next week. After the election, when everything settles down, I'll have time to take calls on all the other subjects in the world. And believe me, given that this is now a later show, you're finally going to hear a depth and breadth of Michael Savage that maybe was hinted at. And occasionally you would hear in an August shows, I could do it. During vacation periods, I would do it more than I would do it during regular shows. When I have time, no one can develop an idea better than I in talk radio, nobody. I say that because I know it's true, and that's all there is to it. And whether it's cars, vitamins, I went to the museum a few years ago, the DeYoung Museum, and there was an exhibit of a woman's clothing. I turned it into a show topic because I'm an avid museum goer. And it was a sad commentary on our society that they would choose to put a woman's shoe collection in the DeYoung Museum. It just shows you how degenerated our museums have become. I turned that into a show topic. So anything you want to talk about, voting, whether government cheese tastes better than the provolone in your pizzeria, anything I will talk about truthfully on the program today. Or the email I just read, but you can't get through on that, I know it. Right? Syracuse, New York. Shane, you're on the Savage Nation. What's your topic?
Yeah, I guess I want to talk to you about young black male voters. What percentage are really voting? And also I wanted to get your thoughts on motorcycles, if you have any, if you have a favorite brand, or do you like bikes or not?
Oh, it's the one area of machine I know nothing about. I never owned a motorcycle because I've always feared I would kill myself on it because I'm a risk taker.
You talk about cars, just never about motorcycles.
Well, I do. I own fast cars, and I'll tell you the truth. My days of speeding in cars is long over, but I have fast cars. The fastest car I ever owned, I just gave it, you know, family member. We traded it back. I gave it back. I couldn't handle it. It was a McLaren SLR. It was just too much for me. Black windows, black body, black wheels. The car was like driving a fighter jet on the highway. So what kind of motorcycle do you drive?
Motors. I mean, are they out there voting or not? Because what it seems like at my work is I just don't see them really caring. They're not going to vote, and they're not really expressing their opinions either.
You're saying who, African-American males are not going to vote? Is that what you're saying, or people in general? I didn't catch that.
I guess young black males. I won't call them African-Americans because not all of them are from Africa. They're Americans. They're black males.
How do I know who's going to vote? I don't know who's going to vote. I know this, that people aren't going to tell you who they're going to vote for necessarily until they get in that booth. My sense is that any educated African-American, and I'm going to use that term because I think that's the designated term that people would prefer. If you don't want to use it, it's your business. I mean, you could say black if you want. That's another term. But does that mean everyone who's a Caucasian is white? Not every Caucasian is a white man either. I'd rather use the designation European American when generically referring to Caucasians. Wouldn't you say the European American works?
I guess that would work. Yeah.
All right. So by the same token, African American works, as does Italian American. So now that we got through the rhetoric or the designation of what we're talking about, I don't know if I were a college educated African American male, and I was working in a corporation today, I would not vote for Obama. I could look right through him. Can they look at this guy and know that the guy's a faker?
Right.
That's my opinion. That's all. I can't speak for the other man. I can tell you this. I would never vote for Bloomberg. You might say, well, what does that have to do with the price of apples? Well, it's the same analogy. Okay. I understand Bloomberg's background, but this guy is an embarrassment to the Jewish people. He's all of the negative stereotypes. The man is elitist. He's disconnected from reality. He's a rich man who's got no common sense whatsoever. So it's a similar analogy. In other words, any educated Jewish male could look at Bloomberg and see the guy is a dimwit with all of his money. He doesn't know what he's talking about, whether it's soda or marathons. Does that make sense to you? I see we're going to get drawn back into signs now, like Obama signs versus Romney signs. I don't think I can take those callers, honest to God. I can't get into signs on lawns. 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282 is the phone number. There are other stories that attracted my attention that have nothing to do with the election that I think are worth talking about to show you the craziness of our society today. And, you know, the one of all of them is not Maya Dunberg. The bottom of my website, michaelsavage.com, there's a story that really drove me crazy. College OK's transgender male and girls locker room. I want you to see how people are using such laws for minority behaviors to fundamentally act out on their perversions. This is an individual, a grown man, a 45-year-old male student who dresses as a woman and goes by the name Colleen Francis. This man undressed and exposed his male genitalia on several occasions in the presence of young girls who use the college's locker rooms in Washington State. And students from Olympia High School and children in the Evergreen Swim Club and Aquatics Academy share use of the locker rooms with the college. Here's the punchline. Rather than prevent the pervert from using the locker room, the school has installed curtains and asked the girls to change behind them. You hear this? This is the symbol of everything wrong with our society. It's the reversal of every reality that you've ever known. So they've turned the girls now into the problem, not the pervert. So people are saying little girls should not be exposed to naked men, period. A college's notions about non-discrimination don't change that. The idea that the college and the local DA will not act to protect young girls is appalling, wrote a parent. What Americans are seeing here is the poison fruit of so-called non-discrimination laws and policies. Placing this man's proclivities ahead of protecting little girls is beyond unacceptable. That's exactly right. So here's a guy who dresses as a woman. He's 45 years old. He goes into a girl's locker room. He strips naked and lays down on a bench there and makes believe he's a woman. And they can't do anything to him because of the straitjacket of non-discrimination policies. You hear this? This is the world that we live in. This is the world we live in. Did you ever notice how certain behaviors are described as inappropriate, but this is not considered inappropriate behavior? What I don't understand is why the swim club hasn't built a new pool specially for him. You know, I don't know why they wouldn't build a special pool for this special person. After all, I mean, he's a special man. I think that the community at large should raise money and build this poor transgendered male his own swimming pool. Thank you, Democrats, for this lesson in self-esteem for perverts, is what one person wrote. Callers, Sonny, KFAQ, Diboll, Texas. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, what's on your mind?
Oh, doctor, I just wanted to know where I might ascertain your train track book.
You know, it's an interesting question. The book is not published till next week. It's available only on Amazon.com, but you can read a free chapter or pieces of it on MichaelSavage.com, and then you can get it on Amazon. By next week, it'll be in every bookstore in America.
Oh, I hope
it's
so.
It's all my memoirs. There's no politics in it, Sonny. So even people who hate me politically, who love me as a talk show host, will be able to read it without
generally
getting
just
nauseous.
Because of your truth. You know, some folks...
Well, I mean, there's stories in there like Dead Man's Pants. You know, I grew up wearing Dead Man's Pants. People don't believe it's true, but it's true. It's true. It's true. It's true. And I'm not proud to say it. I wish that I was rich when I was a kid. I was poor.
About the fella, you lived in Brooklyn or wherever it was, it had a funeral parlor, and he took you up to see a dead body, and
You know, it's an interesting question. It was in lower Manhattan on Ludlow Street, which I'm afraid to tell you is now flooded. I'll bet you that very same room where I saw my first embalming is now flooded with water from the East River.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord God. Yeah, that was a terrible story in a way. It cauterized me. I was about 9 years old, hot summer day, told Dad was going out for a Coke. And you picture me in the corduroy pants and an undershirt, go next door to Nyberg's funeral parlor. And Barney says to me, hey, kid, you want to see a stiff? Now, of course, that would have a different connotation today, but the men were normal then.
Right.
So I said, sure, I'd like to see a stiff. So he said, well, come with me. Get in the elevator, go down. Big elevator. It takes me into the bowels of the funeral parlor. And down there in the bowels, there was a person being embalmed. So I watched it. I mean, I didn't freak out. I just said, okay, that's what happens when you die. You know, not pretty, but that's it. Then, okay, hot day, go back up on the elevator. Come back on the street. There's Dad out on the street looking which way for me, every which way for me. And he looks at me, and he sees my face had changed. And he says, where were you, Michael? And I said, well, I was with Barney in there. And he said, what'd you do? I said, well, he took me downstairs to see them preparing a dead person for a funeral.
He
turned grim. He clenched his jaws and turned grim. He didn't say another word. What can he do about it? It was done already. See, my father was of the school of don't cry over spilt milk. If it was done, it was done.
Yeah.
There was no going back. I remember when I was 5 years old. You know, in those old days, we had milk bottles that were delivered to the house, actual bottles of milk. And I was a kid I got up very early. I couldn't sleep past dawn then. I can't sleep past dawn now. Any light I get up before everyone else did in the apartment. And I'll never forget, I was a curious kid. I would take watches apart, railroad, you know, little toy trains apart. Couldn't put them together, but I took them apart. I took the milk bottles, and I stood them next to the sink because I wanted to stand up and get to a cabinet. In those days, I didn't see a stepladder in the apartment. I stood on the milk bottles, and they fell over, and they broke. Broken glass, broken milk all over the floor. I was terrified my father would go crazy, right?
He probably would have.
No, he didn't. They woke him up. He came in. He appraised the situation. And he said, there's no point in crying over spilt milk. Just clean it up. So that's the way he was. He was a realist. He was an old world realist. If it was done, it was done. You know what I mean, Sonny? That's the way it was.
What type of work did your dad do?
He owned a little store. He sold antiquities. He sold clocks and statues and this and that, knickknacks, you know, things like that. And he specialized mainly in bronze statues that I cleaned down in the basement with cyanide solution, and I thought it would eventually kill me. Luckily for me, it didn't. As they say, that which does not kill you makes you stronger, and I suspect... It was using that cyanide solution to take that patina off the bronzes and make them look like brass. That's giving me, I don't know, maybe it had something to do with dissolving fat in your arteries. Because by the diet that I ate, I should have been dead. Anyway, all of these stories are in my book, Train Tracks, which I said I wouldn't talk about till after the election, but I can see it's already catching on. People want to know about it. If you'd like to talk about politics or locker rooms, whatever, transgendered Republicans who pretend that they're conservative, but they're really socialist, give me a ring at 855-400-7282. It's the Savage Nation. It is the Savage Nation. And, you know, I'm getting so many people calling me now from the Bay Area who used to be listeners of mine who kind of lost track of me. Even though I was on 300 stations, they couldn't hear me. And now that I'm back on KSFO, I'm getting all my old friends back, which is beautiful. And he said, one of my friends just called now. I haven't heard from him in a while. And he said, God, I just listened to your story about the funeral parlor. He said, I loved it. I'm so glad you're back on the radio. I'm stuck in traffic. I love it. So you know what I realize? I think a lot of intelligent people are tired of hearing about the election. They're going to vote, and that'll be it. I think that in the next hour, I'm actually going to start reading from my childhood memoirs, Train Tracks, Family Stories for the Holidays, just a little bit, because it's interesting. It's more interesting than Romney, Obama, Obama, Romney, people defecating in the hallways in Staten Island. I'm sorry to hear it, but how many times can I talk about it? And I don't know where to begin other than at the beginning. So when I come back, I'm going to read from the beginning of Train Tracks. The first line is, I really was poor, which, of course, is very interesting. And then how I got into radio, because everybody wants to know how I went from poverty to media stardom. All of this and more right here on the Savage Nation.
Adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Yeah, here he is. Welcome to the program. 1-855-400-SAVAGE or 400-7282 from anywhere in America if you want to call about anything. But I don't know if you're going to get through. You know, it's Friday night. People's patience have worn thin with the election. And they're dying to talk about other things, or the election itself, and it's open mic to Mike Friday. Let me read you some of the stories that I printed up for the show that I don't think we've gotten to, but worth talking about. Patience wears thin as region cleans up with toll rising. That's an obtuse way of saying that Obama has failed the people in New York City and New Jersey in a big way. That although they ripped Bush to shreds over Katrina, in fact, some lunatic leftist fringe maniacs, including some very powerful ones, claim that Bush purposely blew up the levees in order to punish black people. Do you remember that? If I'm not mistaken, there's a filmmaker who's made one horrible movie after another, but he's given the largesse of Hollywood specifically because he's of a certain, let us say, background, claimed that Bush blew up the levees. Didn't stop him from that. And Harvard professors invited to teach at Harvard, not because they were brilliant, but because, let us say, they looked good on the cover of the Harvard brochure. They said that Bush was responsible for Katrina. I don't hear similar statements. That's the equivalent of if the Ku Klux Klan today said that Obama caused the flooding in New York. That's how crazy it was, right? To say that Bush caused Katrina would be the equivalent of listening to someone from the Ku Klux Klan today saying that Obama caused the floods in New York. But you see, so that's, here's another story. Sources and emails point to communication breakdown in Obama administration during Libya attack. Well, that's a nice way of saying that several people should be taken out and hung from an overpass for what they did in Benghazi, in the sense that they let people die. They were calling for help. They were begging for help. They were signaling for help. They were radioing for help. There were warplanes. There were brigades. There were paratroopers. There was every weapon known to modern man waiting to help them in Libya. And either Obama or his mother-in-law said, no, don't give them any help, because everyone else is saying that I deny it. The CIA said we didn't say stand down. Hillary has said I didn't say stand down. Panetta said he didn't have the information to say stand down. Obama said he didn't say stand down, so we can only conclude it was his mother-in-law who said stand down. What else conclude? What other conclusion can you? Here's another one. Intelligence official offers new timeline for Benghazi attack. This is, of course, from the most shameful of all networks, CNN. saying that there were no orders for anybody to stand down. Tell that to the father of the Marine, the ex-SEAL, who died there while begging for help. And so forth and so on. The greatest cover-up in modern American military history is Libya, and that's because of the fifth column posing as the fourth estate. New York Marathon canceled, Bloomberg says. Finally. What else? Clinton warned of military danger in China-Japan dispute. I'll push that aside for the moment. Not interested in China and Japan right now, if you don't mind. I have enough on my mind worried about that. Yesterday, I said even the homeless recognized that Romney might win, and I gave you an example from the streets of San Francisco where a homeless black man was walking by with a boombox playing KSFO radio. I couldn't understand that. He was making a statement of some kind. Maybe he understands it's all BS. You know, just because you're poor doesn't mean you're stupid. Conversely, just because you're rich doesn't mean you're Bloomberg. You know what I'm saying? That was a turn of phrase. You don't think it's that funny because if you're a conservative, nothing's funny to the liberal. Mean people. Mean. Libs are mean. They don't laugh unless it's got an F word in it or something filthy or dirty, anti-family or anti-church. Then they find it humorous. They screech. Let's see what's on the Daily News website. Sometimes I go there for a laugh. It's nothing. It's terrible. Bloomberg makes major U-turn. New York City Marathon canceled. Good. I don't like marathons. It's narcissistic, self-serving. I don't even understand it myself. I don't quite understand what this herd mentality is with the running. What is it? Can anyone explain to me what a marathon is, why it's appealing? Maybe I'm from another universe. What is appealing about running with a bunch of sweaty people down a city street? What is appealing about that? Okay, well, different strokes for different folks, different blokes. Sandy's aftermath, live update, gas shortage update, Cuomo waives taxes and fees on fuel tankers. Yeah, he did a lot for New York, Cuomo, other than more hot air coming out of Albany now. Queens residents armed themselves in the post-storm blackout from looters. Ever since Sandy strafed the Queens Peninsula and tore up the boardwalk, it's become an often lawless place where cops are even scarcer than electrical power and food. Wow. Wow. There are looters? I thought that Obama and Christie and Cuomo saved the day. I had no idea. Well, how do you like that? And people are turning back to old Smith and Wesson to defend themselves. They're not turning to Bloomberg. What else is in the news? Nothing. Oh, help is on the way. Defense Department to send millions of gallons of gas and diesel to ease fuel shortage mayhem. Where are they getting it from? Where's the Defense Department getting the millions of gallons of gas and diesel? What, are they going to siphon it out of aircraft carriers in the Gulf? Yeah, that would be Hillary Clinton's way of sending fuel to Staten Island. Siphon it out of an aircraft carrier sitting in the Middle East. That would be the answer. Take it out of the F-15s, the F-21s. No, the FA-18 Hornets, sorry. They don't fly F-21s off the aircraft carrier. I saw the FA-18s. Beautiful. Just days before Election Day, cities scramble to find a safe place for voters after Sandy wipes out polling sites. Well, I have an idea for safe places to vote in New York, and I think that Obama would agree with this. Why not Black Panther clubhouses? I think that if Mr. Bloomberg wanted to show that he's cooperating with Mr. Obama, who he endorsed, there would be no better way for him to do so than to suggest that Black Panther clubhouses would be safe places for voters to vote because of the storm. Now, that's not a bad solution. This is a terror. It's much bigger than people think. Listen, let me tell you something. I see images that look like Katrina to me, but the reason you don't hear about it is because if you were to see that, you'd say that Obama did nothing, FEMA did nothing, the Democrats failed us, and the just like the Republicans did, because you've got to understand one basic premise. Mother Nature is almost supreme in her capacity to upset human plans, and there's almost nothing you could do within a few days, whether it's Bush or Obama, in plain English. So you really can't blame anybody for this. 11 busted looting Key Food in Coney Island during post-storm blackout. 900,000 people lost power, won't get lights back for another week. Bloomberg's decision to cancel marathon, right step in nick of time. His career is over. He's finished. Jeroboam Bloom is finished. Jeroboam Bloom is finished. All they can do is go back to count his coins after this. So what would you like to talk about in the Savage Nation? I mean, I could read from my book, Train Tracks. I don't know if you want to hear it. I can do movie reviews. I can do television reviews. I can do dog stories, storm stories, transgender stories, whatever appeals to you on the Savage Nation. Or I can go to the basic prosaic questions that I raised, which I'm not going to do. Given that I have to keep myself entertained, I'll decide what I'm going to do, which is this. I'm going to read from pieces of Train Tracks, short bursts, that's all. I'll read you one paragraph or two, okay? In going through photographs for the book Train Tracks, I found pictures of many of the men that I write about, the gambler, the leather man, the uncle who was a Democratic Party operative. What strikes me is that they were all very ordinary-looking men. You would never pick them out of a crowd and think that they were anything special. And that's just the point of this book, which is that in the ordinary, there is the extraordinary. Now, whether it is that men were more dynamic in those days or that I saw the dynamism in their lives is for anyone to guess. I don't know. Are men still like that? There is a movie called The Naked City where it is said, quote, there are 8 million stories of the Naked City. This has been one of them. I was fascinated by that as a young boy because it showed me that every individual person walking the streets had a story, if only you could find that story. And all of my life, I found this to be true. That, of course, every human in their destiny, in their journey through life, is actually weaving a story. It's just that most of us don't even realize we are unique or weaving a story. Or is it that the times have made so many of us homogenous? Have we become just one massive group of individuals in a sort of socialist hive? Well, whatever the case may be, Train Tracks contains the stories of ordinary men and women, each of whom was extraordinary. Now, I haven't read that since I wrote it. And I got to tell you, I want to read the book. The book rings true. And I almost hit the mark here in what I was trying to do. And as Hemingway said, if it rings, there's a certain ring to the truth that everyone recognizes when they hear it, and there's no way to describe it. That's what I want to say. Shall I go on? Shall I go on or not? I need to hear. I mean, you know, Buddy needs to hear what you want me to do. I'll tell you what I'm going to read. Nightclub. Because it's got drama. I'll skip ahead to story 6 in Train Tracks.
Okay.
Clear the floor, everybody. This is a closed set. Everyone out of the studio. Nightclub from Train Tracks. The bar was dark like a scene out of The Godfather. We sat next to the long, dark mahogany bar at a small table. The steak was served. I had never eaten steak that was this soft. In fact, I didn't know the steak was supposed to be soft. The only steaks I had ever eaten before were hard, rubbery, difficult to cut. This one cut like butter. The tough man served us without a smile. We were the only ones in there on a Saturday afternoon. It was on the Upper East Side of Manhattan in what was known as Yorktown, a German neighborhood. It was owned by my friend's father, Jackie Hart, who was the toughest guy in the neighborhood. He was a professional gambler and a club owner long before anyone knew what that meant. All the other men were either small businessmen with tiny little stores, or they worked in the trades or in the garment center. Jackie was a guy out of The Godfather. He was quiet. He hardly ever spoke. Everyone respected him and everyone feared him. We had gotten downtown not by train tracks, but one of the hard men from the bar had come to get us by car to eat in Jackie's bar. There are many stories about Jackie. This was one of them, the one about the soft steak served by the hard man. Another story about Jackie that comes to mind occurred around the same period when I was 7, 8, 9 years old in the Catskill Mountains, where most of the families from our apartment building retreated to what were known as bungalow colonies, in essence small villages that were rented for the summer. Each family rented a small cottage. This was Paradise Lost. One summer my family, Jackie's family, probably 10 others, all rented individual cottages or bungalows at the same place. It was on a long sloping grassy hill with a swimming pool. This summer, a huge fight had broken out between the owners of the bungalow colony and this group from the Bronx. It was very unusual for these men to engage in a fight, but fight they did. It started over an insult thrown at one of our neighboring women by the owner in the little grocery store that belonged to and was run by the bungalow colony owner. Who knows what it was over, but it was a huge fight that went on for most of the day, and it ended up with Fat Pat the bookie dragging one of the brothers around the property by his collar, pulling him until he gave up, but he wouldn't give up. Fat Pat kept pulling him around, telling him, it's time you gave up, but the guy wouldn't give up. Jackie Hart, on the other hand, got into a fist fight with one of them and bashed the guy's head in. The guy bit him in the forearm, and as you may know, human bites are far more deadly than dog bites. It took him months for that wound to heal. Jackie was a street fighter long before he was a bar owner, growing up in the Yorktown area of New York. He told a story years later to us young kids about the period during World War II when there was an actual Nazi party in New York City and other places sympathetic to Hitler. Jackie was on a subway car when one of the American Nazis jumped up and started to scream, "Kill the Jews! Kill the Jews! Kill the Jews!" Jackie was not a man given to words. He didn't react with words. He said he waited until the subway car stopped at a train station. He grabbed the Nazi and smashed his head between the car and the platform until he was a bloody pulp, and then he left without a word. That was Jackie Hart. There was a fight he talked about. Oh, my God, I'm running overboard here. I'm getting into it. Okay, this is all from my book, Train Tracks. I guarantee you, of all the books I've ever written, this one is closer to my heart and the truest of all. I'll be right back.
Combo.
You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Want me to talk about real estate? I mean, if you don't want to talk about the election or you don't want me to read from Train Tracks, I could always talk about real estate values in your neighborhood. See, this is the thing about radio. I don't know who's listening, what you want to hear. Probably someone wants to hear our story continued about the tough guy. Another guy couldn't stand it. Another guy wants to bash Romney. Another guy wants to bash Obama. Another person wants to talk about sauerkraut. Another person wants to talk about how to make a decent meatball. So therefore, at the end of the day, what is it you want me to do? I am here for you. I will entertain you. But I can't take any more talk about the election. I can't wait till it's over. I think we're going to have a celebration on the air. No matter who wins, I think we're all going to relax. 1-855-400-SAVAGE. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just round it off. I'm going to finish up that story. I got a minute 56, minute 50. No, I don't have time. I thought I don't. Okay, here. Story number 8 in Train Tracks, slum dialect. Now, that's a great 2 words. I invented those. I created those for you. Slum dialect. It's related to talk radio. Slum dialect from Train Tracks. How I learned to speak is very intriguing, given that I am an immigrant's son. My father emigrated from Russia when he was 7 years old, and he had a slight accent, but not a very pronounced one. Having grown up in the tenements of the Bronx, I had somewhat of a slum dialect until I went to college. I remember entering Speech 101. I was asked to give a speech. We were told to listen to recordings of Winston Churchill and Franklin Delano Roosevelt as examples of 2 of the great speakers of the time. I was ashamed to speak publicly. I had a private conference with my speech teacher. He was a very nice man. He said to me, "Michael, you have a wonderful speaking voice." I said, "But I say dem and those and this and that." He said, "Don't worry about that," he said. "Just speak and eventually that will be forgotten." And that's how I learned to dare speak in front of groups, where I got the confidence to speak publicly. That is how I learned to give speeches, through the confidence given to me by this wonderful speech teacher at Queens College in the City University of New York. I had always had a good speaking voice. Going back to the first grade, I was made the announcer. Why? I was the only kid in my class with a blue suit. God bless my mother, she bought me a blue suit, white shirt, and tie. So the teacher said, "Because you have a suit, you're going to be the announcer." I'll never forget getting up in front of that audience. I love the feeling of looking at all those kids staring at me. I guess you might say I was born to lead audiences. That story, it's a little one called Slum Dialect. But you know, 1,000 words or less? Did you get some images out of that? I told you an entire story in 1,000 words or less from Train Tracks. A modern American masterpiece, if I must say so myself.
Ain't time before you break up, but you give it just one more chance. Oh, I wonder, wonder.
Sounds like Drums Along the Mohawk by the Iroquois Swingers. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I think I'm going to go to the websites at 7:30 every night now. That's 7:30 Pacific, 10:30 already, half the people. New Jersey counties, this is from the Drudge Report. New Jersey counties enact 70s-style gas rationing. Developing. Okay, it's developing. Maybe Christie can stand there with the pump in his hand, ask people if he can check their oil. Could you think if Christie filled tanks in New Jersey to show that he cares and he feels for them, that he would offer to fill their tires? That would be quite a scene to get that on YouTube. Governor Christie bending over to fill up a tire. I'm sorry. It's late at night. Is Layla not bending over to fill a tire? I don't think so. I don't think that would work. He's not nimble enough for that. Jet fuel supply becoming service members purged from voter rolls in Florida. No kidding. A Democrat purging service members from voter rolls? That can't be happening. Non-union crews turned away from New Jersey. Gun sales surge. New York Times says Pennsylvania tilting toward Romney. That's amazing. New York City cancels a marathon, that we know. Biden already we made a mockery of just by playing him. He's an instant mockery. Play Biden just for tagline. This is so good. Play four, three, 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 three.
There's never been a day in the last 4 years I've been proud to be his vice president. Not one single day. Not one single day.
Oh, anyway. He's the gift. He is the gift, man. That guy just keeps on giving us gold. He's gold for talk radio. Him and Pelosi, she's better than him. Look, if I had a wish dream, it would be Biden and Pelosi giving speeches every day. I could stay on talk radio another 100 years with the Pelosi giving a speech. And this is amazing stuff. Marco, KSFO, San Francisco, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Miguel Lutz, it's so nice to hear you on a clear, deep channel. Before my 90-year-old mother, I gave her 2 wire hangers to go up on the roof so we can catch you in Sacramento to get you down here in San Francisco.
I love the imagery of a wire hanger. That's nice. So what's on your mind tonight?
I remember you back in the mid-90s with the other station you were before you went national. And I just want to say, if you can, in the next week or two, bring back the Janet Reno, the Elian Gonzalez thing. You did a parody about the whole accent and whatever. You know, I really wish you can do it.
I hear you. God bless you. Thank you. Again, I'm not going to say God bless you. I take it back. I'm not the Pope. Bronx, New York. Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Michael?
Hey, Mike. My name is Michael Angelino. I live in the Bronx. I'm 16. I'm like so excited to be on your show. I'm kind of like stuttering. But
okay.
I just want to tell you, I love the stories you're telling about your book. Kind of feel at home about it. My family in the past, when my Uncle Hugo was actually a bookie. So just to hear all these stories, I really love it. It's kind of beautiful. Like it is at home. My grandfather is a conservative, and so am I. It's so hard to listen to conservative
people.
You're 16
years old? Wait, you're 16 years old and you're a conservative?
Yes, it's rare. It's hard to live in the Bronx.
I'm afraid what you're going to become by the time you're 40. Because there's an old adage that says if you're not a liberal when you're 20, you have no heart. And if you're still a liberal by the time you're 40, you have no mind. But I'll turn it around and say if you're a conservative at 16, you got to be a Nazi at 40.
Yeah. I love your show, and
it's a funny line in its own way. Well, the book is called Train Tracks. You'll be able to buy it next week in the bookstores. I don't know if I should read any more from it. Maybe it only appeals to New Yorkers. Who knows? It's supposed to be universal, but I don't know. But thank you. It brings back memories to people, I don't care where they are, to their lives. And I think the main point I'm making is that everybody has a story in them. Your life is a living story, whether you know it or not. Your kvetchy, horrible life is an actual story. No matter how boring it is to you, if you actually trace it from kind of when you remember till now, there's a your life has been etching out a story. You don't realize that. And then when you get to heaven, God knows the whole story. And he says, okay, step before me and here's your story. You say, no, that's not my story. Yes, it's your story. All those things you did in the darkness of the night, I've been watching. You have to answer for them. Oh, yes, indeedy. Here we are. Stranded New Yorker. People are defecating. We did that already. Played that. No scatological. We have Obama says some of the businesses they bet on will fail. I don't understand that. Fox News national security correspondent Jennifer Griffin says senior counterterrorism officials were cut out of the loop the night of the Benghazi attack. That's a big story. That Obama's mother-in-law, who apparently called the decision to keep help from coming to Libya. Well, the reason I say that is not to be sarcastic. Hillary Clinton has said she didn't say don't respond. Leon Panetta said it wasn't me who said don't respond. We didn't have enough information. Obama says I didn't say don't respond. But when I find out who did, their heads will roll. So no one says that they said don't respond to the people calling for help in Libya. I can only conclude that since None of those individuals said don't send in don't send in any help. It must have been Obama's mother-in-law who said don't send in any other help. I mean, she lives in the White House. She could have done it. She may have a hotline there in the kitchen. I don't know. Somebody did it. Who else could have done it? Reggie isn't there anymore. So who could have been the... Who are they going to blame this one on? Oh, we'll definitely get to the bottom of that one. Oh, yeah. CNN, meanwhile, is denying that Benghazi officers called for help. If it was up to me, if there was a tribunal and I was in charge of it, I'd call up Wolf Blitzer after this, and I'd say, now, why did you say that all of this was untrue? You called yourself a newscaster? Here's your punishment, Wolf. And I go down the list of everybody in the media who's covering this up for Obama. There'd be hell to pay if I had the power. Thank God I'm only a talk show host. Thank God I have no power whatsoever. Thank God God sees the truth but waits. And believe me, if there's a judgment day, Wolf Blitzer has a real big, big payment to make. 1-855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Let's go to another website. We covered that one. Let's go now to, when I wake up in the morning, I go to Drudge. Then where do I go? Let's see, what's the next one? Then I bounce to a lib site, like the San Francisco Chronicle. Every day it's the same thing. It's something about a pastry chef or milk, how to drink milk in San Francisco. And then they bury anything that's bad about Obama. Like here, New York City Marathon canceled. They don't even want you to know that there's a horror in New York City. Barry Zito's pad for sale. Who uses the word pad? There's certain words that are so icky at this point. You know, like pad. You know how out of date that is? Pad. Who uses the word pad? Another word is gig. You do a gig. Who uses those words? That's like saying you're hip. I don't like the word cool. I never liked the word cool. He's cool. I can't take it. I never like cool cigarettes. I don't like people who use the word cool. Nothing on that. Harvey Milk Plaza bench is gone. Helen Keller lesson in sex. Nothing. A zero website. So then I jump off that and I go to WorldNet Daily. Actually, I go to that almost immediately. Sometimes in the middle of the day. A free press for free people. WorldNet Daily. My friend Joe Farah. Let's see the headline. Obama's Benghazi investigator tied to Libya bombing. Oh, God, I can believe every word of that one. Who's this now? This is from Aaron Klein. Thomas Pickering, oh, forget about it. Oh, Thomas Pickering, a long-time wobbly leftist towards the Hamas-Islamist side. That's who Obama chose to investigate the Benghazi cover-up. Right, you know where that's going to go. That's like, who did they choose to look into the burning of the Los Alamos National Laboratory? The governor of New Mexico at the time, remember him? What was his name? Does anyone remember his name? Doug, what was his name? The guy from New Mexico, the governor? He was always like, he had a sweaty upper lip every time he was on television. No one knows his name anymore. Yeah. He looked into why the Los Alamos laboratory burned. Yeah, okay. They found matches in his drawer. Pelosi hosts fundraiser with radical Islamists. Democrats tap Hamas and Muslim Brotherhood front groups for cash. How could any Jew vote for Obama? I don't understand this. How could any Christian vote for Obama? I don't quite understand the mindset of religious people. Well, hey, different strokes for different, you know, blokes. Cop tasers boy 10 who refused to wash car. Okay, I'll skip that one. Let's jump now to Newsmax, my friend Chris Ruddy's website. Let's see what he's got for the lead tonight, Friday night. Ollie North to Newsmax. White House Benghazi actions unconscionable. Okay, well, Ollie's a good guy. I don't like the word itself. It's overused. Unconscionable. First of all, I can't pronounce it. You know, there's some words I have trouble with. As glib as I am with words and as they roll off, I can't say that word. Unconscionable. I don't like the word. There's a better word anyway. White House Benghazi actions treasonous. Would that work for you, Ollie? I think that would be better. Traitors behind White House Benghazi nun actions. That might work. Obama or Romney must deal with ambitious Pakistanis. Scott Brown says Kerry would make great Secretary of State. Oh, God, Scott Brown. You talk about a rhino. Israeli officials see shocking Islamist dictatorship in Egypt. What took him so long? Reid says the notion of Democrats working with Romney is laughable. Okay. And that's about it. Lots of other. Let's go to the next website. I'm going to do websites every night at this time until further notice. Cable says U.S. eyed moving the consulate out of Libya. Exclusive on Fox News. That website's very good. It's updated an awful lot. As security deteriorated on the ground in Libya, officials considered moving Benghazi operation to CIA annex less than a month before the September 11 attack, classified Cable says. Well, but they didn't. And people died. And that goes right to the commander-in-chief, does it not? Yes, it certainly does. Yes, it most certainly does. Tulsa, Oklahoma, Carol, you're up on the Savage Nation.
So I was wondering, my nephew is in the service over in Japan, and he was telling me that, actually he was telling my brother, he wanted a ballot mailed to him because there's no place for him to go vote. I don't understand. That's right.
Well, the reason that a plane crashed with military ballots last week, the reason that military people are being purged from voter rolls in Florida is quite simple. Because the military is predominantly 80% votes Republican. Now, if you were Obama and you were the Chicago machine, would you want anyone who serves in the military to vote at all?
Right.
See, it's simple. I mean, it's really quite simple. Ask Axelrod about that. Obama's brain. Ask him about that, why he's not permitting military members from overseas to vote, wherever the ballot's gone. Ask old Axelrod where they went. So it's quite logical. If you know people are in the military and they basically work for the commander-in-chief, let's look at it that way from their point of view. From the communist dictator's point of view, anyone in the military serves for him. They work for him. They either... They work directly for him or indirectly. There's millions of people in the military, but they work for him. They're his employees. But if they're not going to vote for the guy, why give him a ballot? I mean, that's the way it works in Chicago. So they don't give him ballots. The plane mysteriously crashes with the military ballots. That happened last week, and all the ballots burned to the... Then they purged them off the voter rolls, service members in Florida, number two. That's all. I mean, that's simple. Oh, there'll be an investigation, though. After the election, I can guarantee you, Commandante Obama will look into this. Oh, yes, he's probably going to appoint Raul Castro to investigate what happened to the military ballots. He'll outsource it to Havana to do the investigation because it's cheaper. Let's go to San Francisco. Todd on KSFO, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, this is something I wanted to ask you before you went off the air a couple of weeks ago, but... I saw a video on YouTube where Vladimir Putin was wanting, he gave a press conference and it was in subtitles and he was talking about how he wants a one world government and a one world currency. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, that's nothing new. Adolf Hitler wanted the same thing. Adolf Hitler coined the phrase New World Order, as you well know. And so any dictator would like a New World Order where they're the head of the New World Order. But you see, look... Vladimir Putin is not alone in his desire for a new world order. You have to understand that. There are many loyal Americans like Henry Kissinger, Madeleine Albright, Sandy Berger, to name just a few, who have been working around the clock very, very, very hard and very, very diligently to make certain that we're just another state rolled into this new world order. You know, we're sort of coolies for the new world order. Is that phrase allowed to be used these days? I don't know if that's a derogatory phrase. I don't mean it to be such, but, you know, I mean, why not? So when our labor costs suddenly meet that of labor costs in China, then they'll be happy. It'll be a new world order. That's the way it is. Tulsa, Oklahoma. Doug, you're on the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. Thanks. I appreciate the show. You guys are doing a great job. We were talking
what
about...
Do you mean? Wait, what do you mean? Hold it. When you say you guys, what guys? You mean me? I'm just joking. No, when I hear that on radio shows, like you guys, there's one guy suffering in front of a microphone with a dedicated staff, but it's the guy on the microphone who's actually suffering. What's on your mind? No kidding.
Absolutely. When we were going through who could have possibly been the one that didn't give permission for the response to Benghazi. You went through all the people in the White House that might have done it. We got down to grandma, but there's one person that the media, the drive-by media especially, I think you're probably one of the only guys that have mentioned her, and she's the shadowy figure in the White House. Nobody
Absolutely.
Seems to
know. Valerie Jarrett, a lifetime manipulator, leftist, dangerous as dangerous is. Valerie Jarrett is one of the most dangerous women in the Obama administration, according to many people who've studied this woman's past. Tell us a little bit about her.
Well, what just completely plasters me, Mike, is that if you look this person up, nobody knows about her. You can look her up on the internet, and there's just thousands and thousands of pages about her. Look at her in Wikipedia or anybody, and find out what an evil,
Well, let's start with what we know about Valerie Jarrett. Did she not make a fortune in the Chicago housing market?
Yeah. Well, she brought him to fruition in his his failed Senate.
She has more power than anybody. She's got more power for an invisible person than anybody in the entire Obama, constellation.
Absolutely,
she's definitely an individual who should be paid very close attention to. But the problem is she's too powerful for anybody to pay too close attention to her. I have to take a quick break because we're running out of time here on the Savage Nation. I invite you to call me at 855-400-SAVAGE or go to michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back. In the city, you're listening to Michael Savage. When the lights go down in your city, welcome to the program. It's the Savage Nation. 1-855-400-SAVAGE. Let's take a caller out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Kevin, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I hope you can hear me. I'm on a cell phone stuck in a parking lot outside a large movie theater because my wife has made me buy tickets for the late show so she can listen to your stories from your... the book that you've written. And actually, I want you to read some more stories because I've had to invest in Slurpees and snacks. I'm sitting here in the dark, out in the here, waiting for you to tell more stories.
Well, wait a minute now. We better make certain that Maya Bloomberg didn't hear that you bought Slurpees, because I think in Oklahoma you may have been able to buy the prohibited 32-ouncer.
That's right. We can. I've got blueberry, and she's got orange, and we're set up here in our SUV.
That's very sweet of you. I'm sorry that I had you miss the first show of the movies to listen to the stories that I was reading from my memoir, Train Tracks, which will be coming out next week in bookstores around America. But I'll tell you, Kevin, I'm going to send you a free copy, you and your wife, of Train Tracks, if you'll just give your name and address to Renee, our call screener in Dallas, Texas. Another big hour coming up right here on the Savage Nation. Be here or be absolutely nowhere.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Anti-Pravda Show, The Savage Nation. I have never in my lifetime ever seen a press as servile to a regime as we currently see under the Obama regime. It is astounding to me. It is as though the dream has come true for them, and they can't let it go. We're going to talk about other things on the Savage Nation today, and one is going to come to you out of left field. I pride myself on having a bit of a historic perspective on things on the Savage Nation, and I've been thinking about the government going to war against the people. I was thinking about it because it's happened here, and many of you don't know this. Many of you think that if the army were ever turned on you, the citizen, it would be unprecedented. But you don't know. What you don't know is that the reason the federal government is arming itself to the teeth with hollow point bullets is because they are planning to use those bullets against the people. There's no question in my mind. That's absolutely what they're thinking. However, if they do, it would be a disaster, number one. Shouldn't happen, number two, but there would be a precedent. That's right. It happened in 1932. The story is the Bonus Army. And I'm telling you this story for a number of reasons. Many of you are armed and many of you think you're dangerous. But you have no idea how dangerous a military is with tanks and heavy weapons when they're unleashed upon citizens. Just look at Syria. It happened here. And when I get through with this story on the Savage Nation today, you will shudder to learn which general, or shall I say which heroic generals of the past, were in charge of shooting soldiers dead in the streets of the United States of America. So what am I talking about and why am I talking about it? I am talking about the Bonus Army. When 43,000 marchers, 17,000 World War I veterans, their families and groups, gathered in Washington, D.C. in 1932 to demand immediate payment of their service certificates. They were given bonuses for having served in World War I, but they were tricked. They could not be redeemed until 1945, and the veterans were starving. And they wanted those bonuses redeemed immediately. And so they camped out in front of the White House. Finally, on July 28th, the then U.S. attorney, let's say the predecessor of Eric Holder, ordered the veterans removed from all government property. Washington police met with resistance, shots were fired, and two veterans were wounded and later died. Veterans were also shot dead at other locations during a demonstration. Then President Herbert Hoover then ordered the Army to clear the veterans' campsite, get it out of there. Who commanded the infantry and cavalry brigades with the support of six tanks? None other than Army Chief of Staff General Douglas MacArthur commanded the infantry and the cavalry with tanks to wade into the American veterans who were demanding that they be paid. The Bonus Army marchers with their wives and children were driven out and their shelters and belongings were burned to the ground. Then a second and smaller bonus march occurred in 1933 at the start of the Roosevelt administration, and that was diffused in May with an offer of jobs for the Civilian Conservation Corps, and there were no shootings at that time. The fact of the matter is, this is a sad stain in American history, on American history, when soldier killed soldier. Soldier killed soldier. Did you know who one of the aides was to General MacArthur at the time? During the military operation, Major Dwight D. Eisenhower, later President of the United States, was serving as one of MacArthur's junior aides. But here's an important point of history. Unlike MacArthur, Eisenhower thought it was wrong for the Army's highest-ranking officer to lead an action against fellow American war veterans, and Eisenhower strongly advised MacArthur against taking any public role. He says this. Here is the history. Here is what Eisenhower said to MacArthur. He said, "I told that dumb SOB not to go down there," he said later. "I told him it was no place for the chief of staff." Nevertheless, they did it. And I'm giving you this history so that you understand what could happen when you defy the federal government. They have and they will use lethal force against you. Now, does this mean that we roll over to Obama and his communist brigades? Absolutely not. It means we expose them and we get absolute, we throw them out of office in plain English. As tepid as the Republicans are, they're the only choice we have right now. And I am telling you that everything is at stake right now in the Savage Nation. In this country right now, we have no press whatsoever. Were it not for the internet and talk radio, you would be living in a Soviet-style autocracy. We have a one-party system when it comes to the media. I'll give you another example. A list of the wealthiest members of Congress was published. If you read the fraudulent periodical, I believe it's, what was it called? The name of the periodical, here, The Hill. If you read the fraudulent Hill, and I don't know who publishes this garbage, they say that the wealthiest lawmakers were generally Republicans. Shame on the Hill. It's a garbage rag. It's nothing but a front, again, for the Soviet-style regime that we have in power, because I did my own analysis. And it turns out of the top 10, 8 of them are Democrats. But don't tell that to the Pravda writers at the Hill or anywhere else. We can talk about these topics on the Savage Nation, but I'm going to ask you one that you can relate to, and that is this. Tell me the 5 top stories that the vermin in the media are not covering. Name them other than the Soviet submarine floating around in the Gulf of Mexico. Can you name 5 stories that the vermin like Little Wolfie Blitzer, the shame amongst shames, the biggest Soviet in the history of the media, Wolf Blitzer. They did not stop talking about this around the clock. Tell me the five stories that little Wolfie Blitzer, the man amongst men, did not report and should report. This is lower than yellow journalism at its peak under the worst journalist in American history. I wouldn't even call him that. Press genius. Named who? You know who I'm talking about, don't you? Hearst. Hearst, the man who started a war to sell newspapers. We have never lived with such yellow journalism since Hearst started a war to sell newspapers. We're going to go back to my first topic, the bonus march, because even intelligent friends of mine, and I do have a few, who are history buffs, knew nothing about the bonus march, didn't know the government had soldier killing soldier. And so to begin this, let's play, pick the best soundbite so we can get a background for the listeners. Go ahead, please.
The bonus veterans have defied their leaders. The police cannot handle them since the riot this morning that ended in one death and dozens wounded. And so they're being forced out of their shacks by smoke bombs and tear gas hurled by the troops who have been called out by the President of the United States.
Now remember what this is. These are soldiers firing upon soldiers who served in World War I under the command of the President and the Attorney General. And yet there was one Marine general who didn't join the military in attacking other military. Let's move to clip five, and you're going to hear former Marine General Smedley Butler, a bonus marcher, listen to what he had to say.
I never saw such fine Americanism as is exhibited by you people. You have just as much right to have a lobby here as any steel corporation. Makes me so damn mad a whole lot of people speak of you as tramps. By God, they didn't speak of you as tramps in 1917 and 18. No. Take it from me. This is the greatest demonstration of Americanism we've ever had. Pure Americanism. Don't make any mistake about it. You've got the sympathy of the American people.
Now, this is very important for you, and the reason it's very important is because the vermin in the media, the left-wing rats in the media, are trying to compare the bonus marchers with the communists in the Occupy movement. There is absolutely no comparison between the communists in the Occupy movement, who have contributed nothing to America, and veterans who contributed almost everything to America, who were then denied their bonuses. And yet, the rats in the media are trying to have you believe that the Occupy rats, who are all communists, and they even admit it now, we found an article on this, that one of the leaders of the so-called Occupy movement finally admitted that its real goal is the overthrow of the American system. So don't be deceived. When you hear about the bonus march and say that, and then you're told that the occupiers are the same, understand that the Soviet-style propaganda is at a peak in your lifetime. You are living through the greatest lies ever reported by the American press, and all for one end. It's to bring about the free market system, to bring the free market system to a conclusion, and introduce a system that was tried and rejected by the Soviet Union and Communist China. I'll be right back. Bonus Army, as I said to you earlier, was ordered out of Washington, D.C., and they wouldn't leave. And there were shots fired. Two veterans were wounded and later died. Later, General Douglas MacArthur commanded the infantry and cavalry with horses and supported by six tanks. And the Bonus Army marchers, with their wives and children, were driven out and their shelters and belongings burned to the ground. The reason this is very important for you is that you understand that we have had soldier firing upon soldier here in the streets of America before. And if Obama is reelected, there is no question in my mind this will happen again. There is no question they are preparing for insurrection. The scared, corrupt bureaucrats of the Obama machine are making every preparation to go to war with various elements of the American public, as far as I can tell. This is, of course, one man's opinion. I am not privy to this information. I'm a commentator. I'm a simple American citizen who comments upon things as they occur. MichaelSavage.com. We've got many callers. Here's another topic. Again, it's the same as before, really. What are the five real scandals that they're not covering? That's what I want to know. I know what the number one on my mind is: the sorority house in the Department of Homeland Security, the discrimination against men in the Department of Homeland Security. While Janet Napolitano has trampled the rights of men in the Department of Homeland Security, she has turned it into nothing. Well, I think you have many different ideas as to what it's become under Janet Napolitano. Some have said a sorority house. Others have called it other things. That's a real story because men's lives were put on hold because of Janet Napolitano. Why was that not in the news cycle for more than 10 seconds? Oh, there are many stories that could be covered that are not being covered by the little men and the little women known as journalists. I'm trying to alert America to the fact that governments in the past have fired upon civilians in this country and killed them, even soldier upon soldier, as I pointed out with the bonus marchers. This ties into why Obama is arming federal agencies with hollow point bullets. Far bigger story for the vermin in the media than the BS. Would you say bullets are a bigger story than BS? I would. And yet the little men, the Lilliputians in the media, are talking about the BS. They will do anything to cover up the despotism of this administration. Why is Obama arming federal agencies with hollow point bullets? They're not used for target practice. Certainly not. These are very disturbing news reports about various federal agencies stocking up on hollow point bullets to the tune of hundreds of thousands of rounds. Savage wondered why the Obama administration is so eager to help government employees stock up on such ammunition, as well as why the average American doesn't even know about these revelations. And here's what I said. Why does the Social Security Administration suddenly need 174,000 rounds of .357 hollow point pistol ammo? A message on the official blog for the Social Security Inspector General says, our special agents need to be armed and trained appropriately. To do what, I asked? So that if senior citizens riot when their benefits are cut, they can always gun them down like in South Africa? We're hearing that the National Weather Service also bought hollow point ammo. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration just purchased 46,000 rounds of such ammo. What sane citizenry on earth would not be alarmed when they read that a criminal organization like the Obama administration is arming every agency to the teeth with hollow point ammunition? Why would any government need hollow point bullets in any case? You don't need them for target practice. When you shoot at a piece of paper, you don't need a bullet that expands inside a body and tears up organs. Nobody in the federal government has an answer. You'll never get an answer from the Department of Homeland Security. That sorority house is not in business to help you. They're in business to keep you in line. That's what I said on this show the other day. And yet the vermin in the media, the little Soviet tramps, are talking about the BS rather than the very real threats and scandals that are emanating from the Chicago White House. So I'll turn it over to the storytellers on the Savage Nation, called the average listener and listener, the average listener and caller. What exactly is on your mind? Name five stories other than the ones I mentioned that the little rats in the media should be covering. We have a very dangerous situation. We're not at the tipping point. We've passed the tipping point. This man has purged every agency in this government and put in servile, sycophantic, dangerous, leftist bootlickers who are liable to do anything to America and to the American people. That's how I see it. That's how I see it. And that's why I'm bringing up the bonus march. Why am I bringing up the bonus army on a day like, where'd this come from? It's certainly not something you'd hear on a news channel today. But I have to distinguish myself in my own way, and I have to bring in some historic evidence to bring forth to you on the show that may put things in perspective. We have had other despotic administrations in America's past. We have one right now. This one is a particularly malevolent left-wing sort of criminal machine. I'm sorry to use such strong rhetoric. I feel I have earned the right to tell you exactly what I see. In fact, not only have I earned the right, I don't need the hatred of this despotic criminal regime any more than I already have incurred. Do you think I'm crazy? Do you think that I enjoy knowing that every word I speak invites these Soviet-era functionaries to increase their pressure upon Michael Savage. But if you think that I and others like me, who are clearly independent thinkers and speakers, are not being listened to, not being spied upon by this government, well, I would disagree with you. I would seriously disagree with you. I can guarantee you that there are agents who are spying on Michael Savage instead of spying on the local radical mosque in your neighborhood. You heard me, and I'll say it again. They're spying on every patriot in this country rather than spying on those within this country who would fundamentally destroy the way of life that we have enjoyed in this nation since its founding. That's what's going on. Everything is at stake. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. Veterans are being targeted as terrorists. Those who believe that government is too big are being called terrorists. Those in the Tea Party are being called terrorists. So let me ask you something. Who are the real terrorists? So you get the picture. And that's why I'm in talk radio. It's why I get up every morning. It's the only reason I continue to be in talk radio. There's no other reason. This is no longer a country where there is a free press. It hasn't been so for a long time. But it's become embarrassingly worse than it's ever been in my lifetime. It's a cancer. CNN is a cancer. MSNBC is a cancer. The major networks are a cancer.
The Hill is out with its list of the 50 wealthiest lawmakers. Some notables on there. Congressman Michael McCaul is at the top of the list with a net worth of $290 million. Most of his money, though, comes from his father-in-law, the founder of Clear Channel Communications. Senator John Kerry moves back into the number two spot with a net worth of nearly...
Turn it off. The cancer of MSNBC continues to roll on. The Hill, the cancer of The Hill, continues to publish lies saying that most of the 50 wealthiest are Republicans. I looked at the list. You had to actually decipher the garbage that they put out. And of the top 10, seven are Democrats. Top 10 richest in Congress, number one, Michael McCaul, R. Texas, $290 million. Number two, Senator John Ketchup, Democrat, $198 million. So number three, Daryl Issa, R. Cal, $140 million. Rep. Jared Polis, Democrat, Colorado, $91 million. Mark Warner, Democrat, Virginia, $85 million. Jay Rockefeller, D. West Virginia, $83 million. Richard Blumenthal, D. Connecticut, $80 million. Senator Frank Lautenberg, D. New Jersey, $56 million. Dianne Feinstein, D. California, $47 million. Jim Renacci, R. Ohio, $37 million. So you can see of the top 10, seven are Democrats, not Republicans. What is deceptive about this is that we are not seeing Dianne Feinstein's actual wealth. In order to do that, you would have to know what her husband made while she has been senator. That would be almost impossible to decipher since he's a private citizen. But we do know that contracts have been steered to Richard Blum for years now, going back to the Iraq War when he was a contractor who received, so far as I know, at least one contract worth $500 million in order to supply medical equipment to our troops in Iraq. And there's much more to that story. There is also the curious case of Nancy Pelosi, whose wealth has increased astronomically while she's been in office. Somehow we don't see that data because you're simply seeing the wealth listed by the congressperson. You're not seeing the wealth accumulated by family members while they have been in power. You see, but nevertheless, it's 7 out of 10 top are Dems, not Republicans. So the cancer of MSNBC goes on. The cancer of The Hill rolls on. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. We're talking about the stories that are far bigger than the BS. What are the biggest stories that they're not covering that I'd like to know are on your mind? Let us hear what is on your mind. What are they not covering that they should be covering? I don't know we have any callers on that. Who's the one who says it's good to use the hollow? Is he gone? Mike, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, regarding the DHS purchase of the ammunition, it's interesting to compare that our armed forces in Iraq and Afghanistan have expended about 70 million rounds during the war, yet in 1 year, DHS orders up 450 million rounds. These news stories are talking about the NOAA purchases and the Department of Fish and Game and all them. Those are kind of added on and commented on by the government to kind of make it look like it's a small deal, but it really isn't. 450 million rounds, that's the beginning. By the end of the year, it's going to be closer to 700 million.
So wait. So the government is buying far more hollow point ammo than was used by our military in Iraq, and there's only one purpose that hollow point ammunition is designed for, and that's to tear organs inside a body. Is that correct?
That's right. And the specific type of ammunition they're purchasing has the ability to penetrate things like light metal like you'd find on a car door or windshield.
So why would Wolf Blitzer and the other cancers in television not be covering this? The answer is because it would make Obama look like the despot he is.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything for them politically. In defense of one argument that the other side is making, it does have some application to be using the actual ammunition you would use on the job for target practice, because the weapon cycle, you should notice, they cycle specifically depending on the type of ammunition that's going through them, the recoil, the accuracy.
So in other words, they need real-life practice. Thanks for the call. Rich Democrats versus rich Republicans. If you look at the list, you'll notice most of the rich Democrats didn't earn any of the money themselves. I don't really watch the History Channel anymore. I'm obsessed with military history because the history on it is better than the History Channel. In that, war often teaches us some horrible lessons. And I was watching one the other night on the prelude to World War II, especially the rise of Mussolini. And I noted that when Benito Mussolini, the dictator of Italy, came to power, he was a former journalist, incidentally, a World War I aviator, and a journalist. And he was a fascist who said that the democracy of Italy was too weak to conduct the business of the state. And he put together a right-wing party, the fascist party, and he became the leader of Italy. Amongst the first things that Mussolini did were public works projects on the order of Barack Obama. Huge, huge public works projects. Bridges to nowhere, roads to nowhere, filling in swamps to nowhere. But they were immensely popular because they put people back to work. This model of massive public works projects was so popular that it was then adopted by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who created similar programs in America, and also by Adolf Hitler, who copied Mussolini with his projects in Germany, again, to the popularity of the public, who liked the public works projects. The difference between Mussolini and Obama, the differences are many, because while Mussolini was building roads to nowhere, bridges to nowhere, subways to nowhere, he was also building the Italian Navy. In fact, the Italian Navy at the outset of World War II was larger than that of Germany and of England put together, believe it or not. I didn't know that. The Italians had some big navy, but he was into the massive buildup of the Italian military, Air Force as well. Obama, on the contrary, is, while he's building roads to nowhere, is destroying the military, decimating the military, destroying the military at every turn. It's unbelievable to me how inverted this man is in almost every regard. But you see, there's one thing you don't know about Barack Obama that you should know, which is that he is true to his cause. He is true to his calling. He is following the script that was clearly laid out for him from the outset of his political career. He is not untrue to his call and his calling. Now, you may say that sounds odd. No, his calling is to weaken America in any way he can and to strengthen the enemies of America in any way he can. How do you explain they're calling the rise of the Islamist regimes across the Arab landscape as an Arab Spring to this day, when everyone knows that the despotisms that are arising are far worse than those that left? How do you explain that the Islamists, who have introduced Sharia law in Egypt, or about to introduce it in its totality, who are far worse to the average Egyptian, especially to the Coptic Christians, far worse than Mubarak, why is it that Obama is cheering the Islamists everywhere across the Arab landscape? It leads you to ask yourself which side he's on and whether he's not playing for the opposing team. It leads serious men to stay up late at night asking themselves, have we in fact been invaded and have the enemies taken over this country? Knowingly or unknowingly, there's no answer to that question. It's very hard to explain certain things, including why the government is buying hundreds of millions of rounds of hollow point ammunition. You see, there are many questions that trouble men in the middle of the night, free-thinking men like myself. And on that note, we lead to the callers of the Savage Nation today. Anne, go ahead, please.
Hello, thank you very much. I believe it is quintessential for him to destroy the military in order for him to get his plan going. You've hit upon something that I've carried in my belly for a long time, and it's most difficult for me to express to anyone, so I don't know who to turn to. I'm not really sure what catalyst he would use to put us under civilian military force, which is by his very own words. It could be anything. It could be anything.
Wait, are you talking about that very famous clip where in a most demonic manner he says we must have... Well, let's play the clip, the one that scares most Americans. Wait, hold it. Hold it. Stop. I want to play for you something that Obama said during his campaign that's been buried by the cancer of the media. Listen.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
This soundbite alone could destroy his campaign. The cancer of the media will do anything to bury the scandals and the dangers of this administration. Can you name five other topics, well, one other topic, that the cancer of the media should be talking about instead of what Aiken said about abortion? Name one topic that I haven't touched on yet that the cancer of the media will not touch or won't touch. Notice I've changed my rhetoric from vermin to cancer. The reason is that I think you can pretty much figure out that I'm so disgusted with Wolf Blitzer. I'm so disgusted with the rats in the media that I'll go to any length to expose them for what they are. I'm so sick of these people holding their heads up proudly like they're doing something of any value for the society. So what do you want to talk about? How about the Russian submarine in the Gulf of Mexico that the cancer of the media refuses to talk about? It's Alan. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Michael. How are you doing? I'm concerned about the Russian sub and the recent... violations of U.S. airspace in Alaska and California by the Russians, especially in light of the comment back in March by our president that he was going to be more lenient after the election. I don't know what that really means. And in light of these violations...
You mean when Obama met with Medvedev and he said, when I'm reelected, I'll have more latitude with regard to a missile defense shield. Remember he said, not if I'm reelected, but when I'm reelected? Remember that? That should chill any man's heart, because it seemed to me the fix was in right then and there. But why is it that the cancer of the media is not reporting on the Russian subs' maneuvers in the Gulf of Mexico, undetected, by the way, by the new Navy?
Were they asked to stand down, maybe?
Asked. Apparently Obama's telling them the questions they're allowed to ask him. When the king comes out for his rare press conference these days, he submits a series of questions in advance to the little men and women, the little Pravdaettes, we shall call them. The little Pravdaettes in the media who are permitted to talk to the king are given the talking points that he wants to talk about. There's your free press. There is no journalism left in America. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. Let's go to the callers. Boise, Idaho. Tom has a topic that should be talked about by the cancer in the media that isn't being talked about. Tom, what's the topic you'd like to see covered?
MF Global, they absconded with $1 billion of investors' money, and the Justice Department in the last 2 to 3 days found that there was no wrongdoing, and there's a lot of private investors that are infuriated. And
well, that's right. Why do you think Obama and Eric Holder are not pursuing charges against Mr. Corzine? Answer, because he's a high-ranking Democrat. And where'd the money go? Where did the money go? You know, I keep telling people money doesn't disappear. When $1.7 billion is lost, someone made it. Where'd the money go?
They illegally traded with it. One of the lawyers of the plaintiffs that are suing MF Global said they used it for illegal trading. And other companies, other CEOs have gone to prison for this.
Well, that's right. But the other CEOs were Republicans. We don't live in a free society. Well, let's put it to you this way. The Dems have certain plans for America. And you don't have to shoot people to destroy them. You can start by destroying their reputation. But they can also eliminate talk radio, as they're doing, through means that I can't even describe to you. Nothing to do with the fairness doctrine. That's child's play compared to the market pressures that an overbearing government can bring upon a network, rather a owner of stations. See, when a group owns 100, 500, 600, 1,000 stations, they're very vulnerable to government interference. The FCC, after all, supervises these signals. And so if you want to pressure the owner of 500 stations, what you do is you say to them, you know, you have 100 licenses that are going to come up over the next 2 years. We don't like that guy Savage very much. Why don't you put on a Mexican station where he talks? Or put on Spanish sports that nobody listens to. And we won't give you any trouble. This is how the ball game is played. It has nothing to do with the fairness doctrine. It's called the pressures of a ruthless regime. Same way that Chavez does it. But I'm not finished yet. I'm just starting, incidentally. I have a few moves left. Après le déluge, after the deluge, after the flood, there's me. Yeah, après le déluge, c'est moi, something like that. The French have a nice turn of phrase. They have nothing left but turns of phrases and high-heeled shoes that people seem to like. Larry, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Larry?
Yes, hi, Michael. Do you see any distinction between an anarchist movement and a communist movement? Because you mentioned that it's a return to the communism that was rejected by China and Russia, and I'm wondering, why would they go to something that was rejected? It seems like it's more an anarchist movement than a communist movement.
I'll explain exactly why, because Obama is actually stuck in the past. Obama is an academic. You have to understand the roots of Obama. Obama comes from a hard-left academic past where the Marxism of the 60s is still currently taught. The Marxism of the 60s is still currency in academia. And so Obama is stuck in the amber of the past. What he doesn't understand is that the very policies that he's trying to impose upon America, which he's been quite successful in doing so far, are policies that have been tried and failed in large nations within the Soviet Union in the past. Even the communist Chinese have moved somewhat to the free market. China is still a police state. Make no mistake about it. But economically, China is quite a hybrid, which is why it's booming. There is more freedom for investors and developers in China than there is in America. Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes. Why do you think the cities are booming in China and ours are shriveling? Why do you think San Francisco is falling apart at the seams where the roads are broken? Why do you think there's garbage in the streets of New York? It's because of the bureaucracy, because of the red tape, because of the overbearing officials everywhere you turn, the permits that you need, the inspectors that bother everybody. They don't exist in China, which is why China is booming. China is actually an example of the free market as it was in America in the 1950s, where the government had a hands-off policy and let people rage with their development and investments. And taxes are very low in China. I don't know if you know that. The exact opposite is true here in America, which is why the country is semi-crippled. And Obama would like to take us back even further and cripple us even further. Why? Because he doesn't even understand that the failed policies he is pushing have been tried before and have failed before. That's why. He's not as clever as you think. Take a look at his number one advisor. Who was his number one advisor? Who was Obama's brain? Remember how they used to call Karl Rove Bush's brain? Remember that? Why did they not call the fellow that I love so much, the genius, the street agitator from the streets of Chicago, a long-time, well-known left-wing street agitator who is Obama's campaign brain? Why is he never mentioned in that regard? Why don't they call him Obama's brain? Okay, so the simple answer is the reason that Obama keeps pushing communism or Marxism, as I pointed out in did you read Trickle-Down Tyranny yet?
No, I didn't. Sorry.
Okay, I'm going to send you the best book written in the year 2012, the most important book you can ever buy before the election. Abe, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yo, Dr. Savage.
Yes? What's on your mind?
Let the courage of your callers be an indication of our gratitude
for what you demonstrated earlier in the show, and you demonstrate every day when you come onto our airwaves. And your renewal of your commitment to the truth today, I found to be compelling.
Look, the point is that we know this government is despotic, and it's going to get worse before it gets better. And I'm trying to warn people of what could happen here, because it's happened before. Only this time, it'll be much worse.
Savage.